Hello and welcome to the Tavern Chat Podcast. I am your host, Eric Tenkar, your bartender in the OSR, and this is another in the Designers and Makers series of fireside chats that we've been doing here at the Tavern Chat Podcast. With me today is VB Weird. VB, welcome.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Okay, we are going to now bring VB into the five questions that we ask of all our guests. And then after that, we will do the sandbox or the hex crawl, depending on how you want to refer to it, because there are no other questions beyond that, about except for the questions that come up naturally in our conversation. So, on that note, VB, this looks like a game show, sorry. VB, your first question.
I'm ready.
All right, let's get some audience applause going. Tell us about your first RPG experience.
Okay, this goes back a ways, back to 1978, where I was in high school, and I had just finished reading my first fantasy book, which was Sword of Shannara. And I had just returned it to the library, and I remember I was a sophomore. And I remember being peeved because in the book, he says, I'm going to explain where the elves came from, and he never did. And I'm thinking, where did the elves come from? And I wander over into the cafeteria, and there are two of my friends, Matt and Eric, and they're talking. And so I walk over, and Eric is saying to Matt, Matt, I'll raise you a level if you get me a donut. And Matt just hustles off and comes back with a donut. And I'm like,
nice.
Okay, Matt, what is a level that makes it worth a donut? And so Eric shrewdly says, you wouldn't understand. It's Dungeons and Dragons. And I'm like, ding, 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 ding. I'm like, Dungeons and Dragons? Wow, what's that? He's like, you wouldn't understand. So, of course, I was immediately hooked. And so I said, oh, I got to try this out. And so we, got together at his house. And, he had been running a game for a while. And so we played. And my first character was named Alanon.
Of course.
And I wound up... having a lot of adventures. It was really fun. And we would play from, let's say, Friday afternoons all the way through to Sunday. I'd sleep at his house. And we did that for years and years. We kind of gathered a pretty, good group of RPGers. And we had, a steady weekend game for all throughout high school. But as soon as I had played that first game, I think the very first day, I was like, okay, I want a games master. And Eric's like, well, you can't. You have to apprentice for a year.
The arbitrary numbers we came up with back in high school.
Yeah. So, but of course, and we had some really interesting discussions very early on about games mastering and about D&D in general. And he explained to me that in our town, of which there were a number of really fabulous games masters, and he was one of them. But in our town, the kind of rule was we were strictly anti-Gygaxian. All of the games masters were dedicated to creating their own rule systems. And so we had a completely, wild arrangement of different worlds, different rule systems, except for one games master, Mark Zubin, who played a very strict version of D&D version 1. And so, but it was very strict. He played exactly by the rules. So when you play D&D 1 exactly by the rules, it's very hard.
Oh, God.
So it was habitual that nobody survived. Until the guys got good enough, they got smart enough, they understood the rules well enough, so that people started surviving the second and third level and fourth level, whatever. And so that game was really interesting. But I hardly ever played in it because I really liked the homebrew versions. And so I immediately said, I want a Games Master. I don't care. I got Men and Magic, you know, Monsters and Treasure, Wilderness Adventures, the three little booklets, and I skimmed them. And then, you know, I kind of noticed certain things about it. I was like, why do the levels go jagged when you're going, you know, up the experience point scale? It's like, you know, and there were certain things about it that just seemed to me to be kind of like mathematically, you know, sort of like odd, oddities. So I wanted to smooth mine out, and I wanted to create a system that, you know, kind of mathematically I could model easily and plug things in and plug things out. And so I came up with my own system, and that was back in 1978. And I started Games Mastering, and then it's been, you know, the rest is history, as they say.
Well, you have a nice little history there.
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, it's the best hobby ever, in my opinion.
I would not disagree with that statement at all. All right, well, you started out with OD&D. What is your go-to RPG system and why? And you know, what are you playing now, basically?
Right. Okay. So, you know, we were all homebrew in those days, and we all had our own systems. So, nobody was publishing their systems. In fact, it was a kind of ideal that you didn't let the players know all of your rules, and you didn't let them know the mechanics necessarily. And part of the reason why was because we immediately noticed right away that rules lawyering was going to be a problem. And so the solution that we as a collective group of Games Masters came up with was hide your rules. And so my go-to system is actually, because of that history, is my own system, because that's what I've been playing all this time. So to answer your question, Elthos is the name of my system. And yeah, it's Elthos RPG is the rules system. Finally, after all these years, in fact, just in December, I finally published that rule system, or I should say a distilled mini system version of my original rules. And that's actually up on DriveThruRPG. And that is my that's my go-to system.
Makes sense. I'll make sure I include a link in the show notes for you. That sounds cool. Interesting for the readers. All right. Well, again, as you started out with the White Box, race is class, yay or nay?
For me, race and class are definitely in. But that's with a caveat, which is I handle them, I think, differently than other systems. And so for me, they work. But I've been listening to people talking about their objections to race and class, and I understand. I get it. I see what they're saying. I kind of disagree because I kind of feel like the way that I originally arranged race and class, I specifically did it in a way that made sense to me. And so I kind of feel like, hey, maybe I solved those problems. And at any rate, it works for me, and I like my own system, so I do race and class.
All right. Where do you stand on the mechanic of save or die?
Save or die?
Yes.
Okay, explain that to me, please. What is save or all die? Right. And I'll give all you right. My opinion.
Yeah, no problem. Save or die is the idea that you have to roll a certain number because, I don't know, maybe you failed your roll in disarming a trap, and now you've been hit with that poison needle, and it's an all or nothing. It isn't like save and take damage, save or take damage. It is, if you fail your save, if you fail a single roll, your character is dead.
Aha. Okay. So I can tell you, I don't have anything in my world that is save or die. In other words, I don't bake that into anything. I have everything as, you know, you'll take damage, and if you take enough damage, then you're dead. But I'm not technically against it in the sense that I can imagine that there might be situations where a Games Master might have something like that. For example, I don't know. Yeah, okay. There's super deadly, insanely deadly, you know, poison. And it's like, you know, I mean, okay, you can roll, you know, like 20 D1 million and see how much damage you take. Or you could save or die. You know, so I'm not, I wouldn't say that I'm like completely against it under extremely specific circumstances. If a games browser wanted to have it, or if I wanted to have it in my world, I wouldn't say no, I'm not, I would never do it. I'll just say probably, well, I've never done it before, and I probably won't ever do it. That's my take on it.
Fair enough. All right. Our final question before our hex crawl. What would the teenage you think, you know, the you that came into the hobby in high school, if they could see what you would have accomplished in this hobby by this point in your life? I mean, you have a game that you saw, you have up on RPG Now. What would the teenage you think?
Well, I have to add a little bit to what I've done because it will definitely impact the answer. So if I might go on for a bit.
The mic is yours.
Okay, thank you. So when I created Elthos RPG, I had a, you know, my rule system, and I had been games mastering for years. And I, at one point, I was hitchhiking around, and I wound up in Washington, and I met some of my old games master buddies. And this is back in 1983, somewhere around there. And we were having a conversation, and I said, you know, guys, there are computers out there, and why don't we have computers help us to run our games? And everybody kind of shrugged, and they're like, yeah, well, someday, you know, we'll undoubtedly get that, a Games Master's Toolbox, as I called it. And then by 1994, I noticed that nobody had created a Games Master's Toolbox. And so I called a couple of my buddies from high school and I said, guys, why don't we do this thing? Why don't we make a Games Master's Toolbox? And so I wrote up some specifications for it. And I, you know, like a schema of what I would expect the application to do. And I figured, okay, this will probably take a couple of years. And so I convinced them to, you know, kind of work with me on it, and we did. And so I started off learning programming in order to work on this and doing databasing to work on it, and I created a DB application back in starting in 1995 when I started programming it. Okay. And so that's why you'll see my VB Weird name comes from 1995 when I got my first email address in order to work on this project to communicate with them. And so so I started building it and so on. I started with QBasic and I had a little hex grid. That logic of that hex grid, by the way, is still in the application to this day. But and I started building a character generator and a monster generator and so on. And then I switched into Visual Basic 6.0 and started working in that. And I created a full-blown, completely comprehensive Games Masters utility that did character generation, did mapping, combat. You could pull characters around on the screen on maps that you paint onto the screen with hex grid or square grids, taking into account terrain values and movement and weapon damage and shielding and all kinds of stuff. And did group management, so you could create auto-gen groups of characters. You could create your own races, your own monsters, your own magic items, your own weapons and armors and classes and so on. So I had this comprehensive, completely finished application by about 2000.
Nice.
And yeah, so it took a long time to work on it because I was doing it in my part-time hobby mode, working with a couple of my friends, but that kind of work was more like they were helping me in a design sense to review things, but I was quote-unquote the programmer. So, you know, I was the guy who was actually building it.
Right.
And so But they were great analysts, so they really helped me to analyze the mechanics to the point where I really felt like, okay, these mechanics really are smoothed out and really kind of crystal clear and clean, and I like them and so on. So anyway, I programmed that. And then in 2003 or 2004, somewhere around there, I realized that, you know what, though, the problem with this is that I can't release it to the public without getting completely buried by support costs, because it's a Visual Basic application and everybody's computers are going to be having all kinds of problems with DLLs and DLL hell and blah, blah, blah. And I had been programming professionally at that point as my main career for long enough to know that that kind of thing would really sink a company. And I was like, okay, I don't want to put it out there. So I decided to completely start over again. And I created an ASP.NET web application that I took everything from the VB application and put it, you know, reprogrammed everything from scratch, rebuilt the database and restructured everything, simplified it. Now as a more professional programmer, so I could do better things with it. And so I created an application called the Mythos Machine, which is online, and it supports the Elthos RPG rules. And so that is the kind of achievement. And so finally, in December of this year, last 2018, I published the rules and I put the Mythos Machine online for public consumption in a kind of completed sense. And so that is the achievement. Now, if I were to go back to high school and say, Mark, 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 this is what you will achieve, I'd be like, holy crap, that was only supposed to take 2 years. What the hell?
So, oh, that's yeah. Awesome.
So that's what I would say.
That is, oh, God. Yeah. But,
so,
you know, it isn't. The path we take is often as valuable as the end results. And obviously, you got your results. It might have taken a couple of years longer than you expected, but I'm sure it's much more refined than it would have been otherwise.
Well, you know, mostly what it is I've enjoyed working on.
Okay.
You know, so it's been, you know, people talk about labor of love. If there was ever a labor of love in this world, I would have to say Mythos Machine is a prime candidate for labor of love, because, you know, while I looked at it from a perspective of, sure, I've got a product and I'd like people to, you know, make a contribution because, you know, I think it's worth it, I really never expect that it is, you know, kind of like a money thing. It's more of a, I have this idea in my head of a type of utility that would be useful, that would help me as a games master to run and create my worlds, and I could create any number of worlds, and they could all be different, they could have different, you know, things in them, and different, you know, I've structured the Mythos Machine so that you can shape the rules themselves by modifying, like, all kinds of configuration options, like how fast do characters level, and how many experience points do they get per, you know, there's all these formulas, and you can, you know, kind of toggle up and down various attributes of your world. So each world that I create can have different characteristics. So I can have a real slow running campaign world that's designed for slow growth. Or I could have a one-shot campaign where it's like, no, you're gonna jump 3 levels during the game, you know, by moderating the options. So I really felt like, okay, this is something that would really be just a beautiful thing. I wanted to kind of contribute it to the world, you know, sort of like before I die, this is the thing I want to give to the world and say, here's my gift, world, goodbye. And so that's why I'm, you know, working on it. And so it's really kind of just something that I've enjoyed working on. It's like a fun tinkering thing. It's my hobby project. So I don't consider it like, oh, it took so long, because I don't expect it to ever be the kind of thing that I'm going to put down and say, it's done.
So like the version that is up on RPG Now, is that like the 1.02 version or something like that, and it's going to be continually like a living document in a way, almost updated as you get, you know, closer and closer to what you want it to be?
Yeah, the ultimate ideal. Well, yeah, in fact, in the rules book, it actually says this is version 1.0 of the mechanics and version 1.0 of the rules book format. And on the website, it says this is version 1.0 of the mechanics. And so as I update the mechanics, I will update the mechanics number in the rules book. So people will be able to know, okay, this rule book is for this, you know, for the world, you know, for the Mythos machine, you know, this level of mechanics in the Mythos machine.
Okay.
You know.
So now, you've been working on this for, we'll just say years. Dollars to Donuts, I know you have more stuff that you want to come out for it. I'm assuming not just the mechanics, but to expand upon it. What's currently driving you?
Well, the idea of this project is, you know, ultimately what I really would love to do is to try to encourage people to use their own imagination. And originally, my first question about the computer age was, you know, in terms of this project, was how can I use a computer to bring people together rather than isolate them? So this project actually was kind of born out of that question. And what I'd like is for people to create worlds and proliferate the worlds, because in the Mythos machine, there's this whole mutual collaboration society set up where if I make things public, then it goes into the world things trading post, and those things become available for other people to look at and then pull into their world. So it creates a copy of those things and pulls them into your world. So if you create a new fantasy world, you might go browse around in the other fantasy worlds and say, ooh, wow, this kind of sword is really interesting, and pull it into your world. And as you make things public, you add them to the list of things that other people can also pull into their worlds. And so I'd kind of, you know, I mean, my goal is to create a kind of environment, a sort of role-playing game printing press, you know, sort of like a Legos, you know, like component building thing that lets people share their creativity and create worlds and, you know, games master them. So right now the goal is to find authors who are interested primarily in settings. Okay. And offer them a platform that says, you know, basically, here's the rule system. You can flex it in any number of ways to kind of coerce the rules or manipulate the rules so that they achieve your kind of gaming goals for this type of world that you're building. And I'd like to, you know, invite people to come in and create worlds. And the way that the Mythos machine is set up is if you create worlds and you package them as a kind of premium tier games master, then you can put a price tag on them and sell them. So you can create worlds and then sell them in the Mythos machine so other games masters can then, you know, buy them and get a copy of that world and then use it to run their games, and they can modify them the way they see fit. Or they could go on and create their own world. So because, you know, my goal is to create a kind of community of games masters who are creating worlds. That's the goal for the project.
As you can hear my wonderful dog in the background.
Sure.
Oh, mommy's home.
Mommy's home.
But now, so this is more than just a rule system. This is community building, really.
Yeah. I think of it more as a rules framework, because it's really designed to allow games masters to create their own worlds in which they will have their own rules. So every world is very likely to be different. At a certain strata. Like, for example, if I create a skill, the way that my skill works, you might have the same skill, but the way my skill, my rules for my skill work may be different than the rules for how your skill works. So we might both might have lock picking, but your lock picking might be very sophisticated and has to do with exact different types of, you know, locks, and mine might be very generic and just say it's a lock and it works like that. So there's a lot of possible variation in terms of how people can create those worlds.
So you can really affect the granularity of how it all interacts. That's interesting.
Yeah. And the other side of it, so that's the Games Master's toolbox side. And then the other side of the Mythos machine is this world building side called World Weaver Studio. And that is where you create your places. So you'd have a hierarchical tree of places starting with, let's say, your planet. Or you could, if you're doing a space, you know, opera, you could do your galaxy. So you can set your levels of, you know, this tree. So you can start it at any level you want. If you were playing, let's say, Land of the Giants, you might say that the top level is the town. And then it goes all the way down to the micro scale, you know, but you got 9 levels in which you can kind of position things in your places. And then each place can have a campaign, and the campaign, or one or more campaigns. And then each campaign is composed of one or more adventures. And so you write those out, and it's like a kind of modules creation utility. And then you can print them out and export them to PDF, or, you know, just use it online at your game. Or whatever, and it'll let you print it with all the stat blocks for all the groups that you've created and the monsters or NPC groups or whatever. So it's kind of the idea of it is that when you're done with your world and you're ready to play it, you go to this print world screen, you pick the level of place that you want to print down from. It could be the top or it could be anywhere underneath. So it might have a continent with, you know, 3 provinces and a city and countryside. And in the countryside, there's a dungeon. And I might print from that dungeon spot down. And then I get a printout of that dungeon with the monsters in it and so on. And so that's the kind of like how it's intended to be used. And I'll leave it there.
Well, so, and it's also pretty much very flexible as for genre. Like you're mentioning space opera, science fiction, and so it's not just fantasy. So I'm guessing we could even do some Call of Cthulhu-esque or gangbusters type stuff without much effort. That's pretty nice.
Yeah, I mean the only effort is in you know, creating the things that would pertain to that genre. So you know, like if I did gangbusters, then I'd want to have the types of weapons and armors and things that pertain to that. So I'd go ahead and create those. And those would become mechanically part of the world. So like, for example, when I create an armor in the Elthos rules, an armor has a dexterity modifier. It's got a damage absorption. It has an armor class and it has a movement modifier. So, you know, when I create a new armor in the Mythos machine, or even if I were doing it on paper, I'd do the same thing, is I'd assign those properties to it. And then mechanically, the Mythos machine applies those properties to whatever character would go ahead and buy it. So if my players log in online and they generate their characters and they say, okay, now I'm going to pick my armors, it will do the number crunching to figure out what is their armor class while they're wearing that armor. So you could create any kind of armors or any kind of things in your world, cultures, classes, races that you want that fit that genre, whatever genre you're shooting for.
It's very flexible then.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was designed, you know, the concept was, you know, let Games Masters do what they want. Let them create any kind of world they want. And I tried to design this so that they could create any kind of world that they want.
From what I'm hearing, it looks like you've done a very fine job of doing it. I think the years invested in this pretty well for you.
For me, it's actually getting to the point now where I'm actually seriously getting excited about it, in the sense that the worlds that I'm building now are, you know, just so fun to be able to actually build them. So I've got my first space opera, which is called The Way of All Flesh, and it's about this basically this intergalactic war that will come about over the next 10,000 years between AI and living creatures. And so it's the, you know, and the question, you know, the questions that come up around that issue of what is going to manifest in the universe, what is going to become of artificial intelligence versus actual living organic matter, and how are these two sort of elements of the universe going to wind up interacting? And I have it, you know, that there's a, you know, basically a war brewing between these two forces. And the question for the player characters is, what are we going to do? How are we going to make our lives in this universe work? And do we need to fight the AI? Do we need to co-opt the AI? Can we co-opt the AI? Is the AI planning to wipe us out? Will it want to wipe us out? Or will it see something about humanity or intelligent life that it doesn't have, that it wishes it did have? And so on. So all these questions. So for me, the Mythos Machine is now the kind of tool that I can use to create a world like that, which is what I've always wanted, which is why, you know, ultimately I created it so I can do this thing. So anyway, and that's, you know, so yeah, that's where that's at.
And other GMs could go into your world and basically pick pieces of it that they would like for maybe their world, and that the flexibility is just, again, it is simply stunning.
Yeah, it's, I think what it is too is that people who are first encountering the Mythos Machine, it's kind of a big application. You know, when you first encounter it, it's like you know, it may be like you don't even get it. At first, you're like, okay, I could build a world, but you're not seeing all the things you can actually do. Like, once you create your races and your classes and your weapons and stuff, and you've set the defaults, so you can auto-generate entire parties in just a few seconds because what you're doing is you're setting defaults. So let's say I create a new race, and I call it the Ooglats, and they have three classes, the fighter class, and a wizard class and clerical class, let's say. And so I have weapons, and so I can give the fighter class a default set of weapons and the magic user class a default set of armors and spells and so on. And when I go to the, okay, I want to auto-generate a group, then I can say, okay, in this group I'm creating a new adventure, and I want there to be 5 wizards, 20 fighters, and 3 clerics of this particular race, and at these levels. So I want, you know, 10 first level fighters, but, you know, 12, you know, 10th level fighters, whatever. And it'll auto-generate it all and equip them all with your defaults and select skills based on their level, and basically fill out that group, and depending on the size of the group, but just a few seconds. And so when you first get to the Mythos Machine, you're looking at it and you're like, whoa, build a world. You might not know that, and this is where I can go with this thing. This is what I can do with it. And you might not know that the World Training Post is there and I can go and explore other worlds and pull stuff in. So I'm trying to kind of map out right now for any, you know, anybody who's interested in this, kind of the options that you have. So I'm sort of splatting, you know, like the Mythos Machine, all this stuff, to try and give some ideas as to, you know, sort of its scope, because it's, when you first get there, it might not be readily apparent, but yeah, it's there.
Now, can you like create your setting, like more focused and then expand out as you need it? Or is it building the whole world at once and then drilling down?
No, I mean, you can do it any way you want. So the way I do it is that for me, I start with a kernel of a campaign. I have an idea, something sparked my imagination. So I have this idea based on, Kashchei the Immortal. I saw this old, 1923, I think, movie, of Kashchei the Immortal, and I was like, oh wow, this gives me such a cool idea for a campaign. So all I did was I made one town, And I just built it out, and I put the things in it that I wanted, and I created the things that I wanted, the magic items, and so on. And I kind of patterned it after that story. And but as I was playing it with my friends, then I was expanding on it as I go, because as they're playing, I am kind of adding to the world ahead of them. And so that's completely possible. Or you could create an entire finished world and do it that way.
Okay, yeah. I've done it both ways, of course, during my many years of gaming. We all have, if you got that itch of world building. And I find for myself now it's better for me to localize and then maybe sketch out the main, but not detail it until I need it, because it can be overwhelming for me otherwise. But you have a nice tool here. Now, here's another question. If people want the world building tool, can they use it with other systems? Just use it to build their world and then play it out with, I don't know, whatever, Call of Cthulhu, Star Wars D6, Labyrinth Lord?
Yeah. The reason why I split out the World Weaver Studio and made it separate from the Games Master's Toolbox was specifically for that, because I realized, you know, there's setting designers who may not like to be tied to the Elthos RPG rule system. Now, there's still some, you know, some overlap. Like, for example, if you're creating a world and you're including treasures in that world as part of your build of the world, and those treasures you've created include weapons and armors, then those weapons and armors will have properties that pertain to the Elthos RPG rules. But you could exclude that, or you could modify that and say, okay, well, here's the description of the armor. I'm going to leave the properties neutral, and I'll just fill those in for D20 later. You know, and you could definitely do that. Yeah.
So that makes it even more flexible. That's really awesome. Because my experience is world building is a lot of fun, but a lot of times it can be overwhelming. And I can tell you how many worlds over the years I've probably started to detail and then walked away from and find them years later. But this seems like an application that will allow one to continue with their desires and drives and not get bogged down and walk away.
Yeah, I think that the strength of the concept is that you don't lose your stuff. So as you're building, like, you know, I know from my own experience, you know, going back 1978, I had all these spiral bound notebooks that were filled with my world details and stuff. And it was hard to refine stuff. You know, it's like, where did I put that thing? And so on. So I wanted the Mythos machine to give me the ability to search through all of my things and find things by name. So if I know that I have a sword named Kakasha, I can search in the Mythos machine, and I'll see in the list all of the places that I reference Kakasha throughout my entire world. And so that allows me to kind of build as I go and not actually lose stuff, which makes a big difference in, you know, depending on the size of the world. If I have a really small world, it doesn't matter. But I have some, like Elthos itself, which is my first world, is huge. I mean, I have, you know, what, 25 years worth of stuff, you know, sort of built up in there. So it's so it's easy to get lost. It's easy for me to lose stuff in there. And one of the purposes of the Mythos machine is to kind of help me not to lose stuff, so I can keep the sort of world coherency, because I can go look for things and go, what was that again? Oh, right. And then go and build new stuff and whatever, and I can use it that way. So that makes it possible to build these extensive worlds without getting, you know, completely lost in them.
Cool. Wow. I got a lot of stuff that I'm going to be checking out after this episode is done. Cool. That seems like a lot of fun to experiment with. The world building is, I don't know, once you get bit by it, whether it's mapping for worlds or building the societies up, you just, it's in a way, it's like the ultimate creativity
that you can do.
RPG. Absolutely. That's what I love about it. That's what I love about RPGs, and that's why, you know, I'm kind of like a dedicated homebrewer, because I'm addicted to this thing about creating worlds and creating settings and being like a science fiction writer, except my science fiction is actually a game, so the players are the ones who actually run the plot forward and find out what's going on. And I'm the backstory creator. You know, to me, this is all super addictive stuff. Like, I'm driving around in my car listening to the radio, and I get ideas, you know, throughout the day. I'm like, oh, man, that would fit perfect over here. Da-da-da. Oh, what a great idea. The politics, da-da-da. And put it into my world. And, you know, so, yeah, I think it's the best hobby ever.
Wow. Well, you've certainly opened my eyes, because I did not think that world building could be, dare I say it, organized. I'm a disorganized individual in the first place, and my world building is usually all over the place. But no, you seem to have put together a product, an app, something that some people can use to focus their creativity. And I'm looking forward to experimenting with it.
Wow, great. Yeah. And I'd love to get your feedback on, you know, just what do you think of it? How does it work for you? Because, you know, like I was saying earlier, this is an experimental thing for me. It's something I'm constantly tinkering with. So I'm always looking for feedback on how can I improve things, or, you know, is there a point where you want to get from A to B, but you can't because you've got to go through C first, or da-da-da. And how can I smooth it? So I'm looking for any kind of, you know, advice and feedback on it, you know, at all. So, yeah, that'd be great.
Sounds like a plan. Well, VB, I thank you for joining us today.
Sure, sure. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
This is, again, as somebody who loves to tinker with world building, and in more recent years, I've just been like, you know, doing maps, especially with some online programs or apps, and then moving on to sketching out the world, and then trying to get those details down. There's always a point where, being a disorganized person, it doesn't work so well. You have something that sounds like you might have a cure for my disorganization, and I'm definitely going to have fun with that.
Cool. Yeah. And, you know, don't like kind of go it alone. One of the strengths of this concept is that it's a collaborative environment. So as you're building stuff, you know, one of the aspects of it, and I think Discord is perfect for this, is to get together with other Games Masters and kind of brainstorm through your creation process with other Games Masters and say, hey, I've got this situation where these goblins are in this thing, and I'm kind of sort of brain stuck on what, you know, why would the master villain be doing blah, blah, blah. And I've been doing this for a few years now, and I can't tell you how tremendously helpful it is to be able to get online and kind of collaborate on the world building aspect with people too. So, you know, anytime you're like kind of stuck, or you want some input or brainstorming, you know, advice on your world building, you know, I'm available. I'd love to do it. And I'm pretty sure there are other Games Masters who would also love to do it. And I'd love to see a community of Games Masters, like kind of like a cat herding channel that's just devoted to, hey, let's help each other to build our worlds.
Huh. Well, I think you might actually do something like that. And we have the options. Discord is very flexible in allowing you to build new channels out. So, Pex, you're listening in. I know that. We might have to look into this.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll be a member right there.
Oh, there you go. I'm not just a member; I am also a client and owner. There you go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's like the hair club for men, but just much better. All right. Well, on that note, VB, again, thank you. This was fun, and I enjoy doing all of these fireside chats, but this is the one that, like, my mind is already like branching off on the side, like, oh man, I could do some really cool shit, and like I'm trying to like focus that half of the brain to like, let's just finish the episode first, getting ahead of me. But, I hear it. But no, seriously, thank you, man. This is a, dare I say it, an eye-opening. So.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And thanks for having the whole Tinker's Tavern, you know, concept here. This is like, you know, now my completely go-to spot for social media is, you know, I pop in here and I feel like, okay, there's a community here. This is great. So thank you for putting it together. You and Pex and everybody else on your team are doing an awesome job.
Yeah, I've said something like this before, but I'll certainly say it again. I'm very happy to, you know, hold the tent pole, but it's the community itself that really fills the tent. And without them, we wouldn't have what we have. So, and people like Pex. Pex is if I could be an organized individual, Pex would be that aid in my head that would be making me organized. But you know, he's amazing when it comes to that stuff. He knows my weaknesses, so it works well.
All right. Well, thank you both.
On that note, again, say it again. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. Folks, as always, I'll include links in the show notes so you can check out what VB has to offer. No, I'll be checking that out. And stay safe, be well, God bless, roll those dice, and I will talk with you all tomorrow. Later, folks.